From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has confirmed the detection of a highly pathogenic avian influenza in an Idaho dairy herd. Cows at a Cache County dairy operation started experiencing symptoms shortly after the farm received a shipment of cattle from an operation in Texas, where cows there later tested positive. Now, we also know that at least one worker in Texas has also been infected. So joining us today to talk more about this, as well as the impact on Idaho, is Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Dr. Pate, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Gemma.
And remember, folks, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send it to us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So, Dr. Pate, let's just start with the basics. What is avian influenza, and I guess what's the difference between this one compared to I guess a low pathogenic avian influenza virus?
Right. So there are different types of influenza viruses. Most people mm-hmm. that listen to this show, when we've talked about influenza that we get every year, are familiar with A and B. That's what's normally circulating, and that's what's in your flu shot. So when we talk about avian influenza, this is a virus that circulates in waterfowl. They get it from water. They carry it with them. They excrete it. And then domestic birds get exposed to it, and they get infected. If it kills most of the domestic birds, you know, chickens, those kind of things that get infected, we call that highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI. And if it doesn't make them sick, we call it low pathogenic avian influenza. And most of the influenza viruses in birds is low pathogenic. What happened is this one, we started noticing was really picking up speed and killing, well, resulting in a lot of infections. And then because it is so highly lethal in domestic birds, you often hear about whole farms having to, of chickens or whatever, having to be culled because of that risk. Now, what happened is over these last couple of years, we have progressively been seeing this virus expanding beyond birds, which is far less common. And it started appearing in mammals, which it certainly can do, and that's not a shock. But what has been shocking is the wide range of mammals that we've never seen before. So it's very possible that listeners remember hearing about a big outbreak in a mink farm in Spain. To my knowledge, that's mm-hmm. the first time it infected mink. And then you probably remember the pictures of seeing seals or sea lions lying on the coasts, particularly down in Peru, where it was even affecting ocean mammals, which is just really striking. But then what happened just about a week ago is the first time that we identified it in cows, in cattle. And so that was confirmed on the March 25th in Texas. They've had seven different herds with infection, Kansas with two, Michigan with one. And that's notable because the other states are down in the south and Michigan is up in the north. Well, if this virus is spread by wild migratory birds, as is usual, then that is a little surprising a case would show up in Michigan, because a lot of those birds haven't migrated up to Michigan yet. They're down in the south or on their way. And so what was found is that actually they had obtained some cattle from Texas. And so we think that's where the infection was. And then 2 days later, we had a case identified here in Idaho, as you mentioned in the intro. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that they got some cattle from Texas. So this is a very different. We've not seen this before, and it seems to be that we're identifying quite a few herds very suddenly. So something's going on, but they're certainly looking into this.
So Dr. Pate, what happened to increase the public health attention to avian influenza?
So avian influenza has always, I think, had our attention because it is one of those scenarios. You'll remember me saying at the very beginning of the coronavirus pandemic that, you know, even if people are downplaying COVID and the SARS-CoV-2 virus and thinking it's, a very low mortality, which relatively speaking it is, that we still need to take pandemic planning serious. We still need to take measures to prepare, because I could name many viruses with tenfold or more mortality rates. Well, the mortality rate of this virus in the people that it has, that we know it has infected, is slightly over 50%. In fact, there was just a death of a 21-year-old overseas, a student, from this disease. So this is not in the ballpark of what we've been dealing with COVID, maybe 1-3% mortality early on. This is like over 50. And certainly we've had some outbreaks where it was even much higher percentage of those people that died. So this is one of those nightmare scenarios that we have to plan for. Now, fortunately, nobody needs to be overly worked up about this. We just need to pay attention to it. We don't need to panic. Is that avian influenzas do not transmit to humans very well. All the cases, pretty much all the cases that we've seen, it's in people that were involved directly with birds or animals. And even once they got infected, they tended not to spread the virus onward. And that's because that avian influenza uses a different type of receptor that is not common in humans, except for our eyes. And that leads to the interesting finding that the farm worker or cattle worker in Texas who got infected, the way it became clear is he had conjunctivitis. His eyes were very red, and the avian influenza virus probably infected that.
So, Dr. Pate, I'm curious then with all of this, is this avian influenza virus, as you said, we don't need to worry about it in humans, but what about with cow milk and things like that, since we're finding this in cows? I do know that the state of Idaho, the Idaho Department of Agriculture, has stopped allowing cows in from states like Texas and New Mexico right now. But what do we need to be concerned about?
Right. So several things. So first of all, I think that I want to say, while I've been critical of the CDC during the pandemic on a number of occasions, I think the CDC is handling this one very, very well, and probably because it hasn't gotten politicized. I also want to express how impressed I am with both the state and federal dairy and animal health workers. They're doing a great job. The reason we want to limit the movement of the cows is just because of what we just talked about, where we think that the infection in the Idaho dairy farm probably was introduced by moving some of those Texas cows up here, and they brought the virus with them. So right now, a reasonable step is, until we figure this out and how it's transmitting, let's just, you know, kind of hold off on the movement until we can figure this out. The other thing is, we don't have to, thank God, we don't have to worry about the milk, because we know the pasteurization process kills the virus. So drinking pasteurized milk is no risk. What we would not advise, and we didn't advise it before this for other reasons, but some people think there's health benefits to drinking unpasteurized milk. There is not. And there's just danger. And now it's a little bit more. So don't drink unpasteurized milk. But if it's pasteurized, you don't have to worry about it. This virus also hasn't gotten into the beef cattle. And even if it does, the process of cooking beef would kill the virus. As far as worrying about in humans, while it's difficult for the avian influenza virus to infect humans, it's not impossible. And and what, you know, longtime listeners of the show, remember we talked about the more we let this virus spread, like we did with the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and especially the more animals it gets into, the chances of mutations that might assist the virus in changing who it can infect and how increases. So we still need to take it seriously. This is not an imminent threat. I agree with the CDC. The current public health risk is low, but we have to watch this because that could change. And the most important thing is we should just prepare. That was the whole reason Dr. Epperle and I wrote our book. We just need to prepare and use this opportunity. And you hope for the best and you plan for the worst.
So with that said, Dr. Pate, is there anything that we should be doing differently right now?
Yeah, the big thing is we need to protect farm workers that are coming into contact with these animals. They need eye protection. As I just mentioned, the one area where this virus can directly infect humans even today is our some receptors in our eye. So eye protection, N95 masks, because what we're thinking, we don't know yet, but when milking the cows and then that milk is going in, it's probably, we know there's high levels of virus in the milk. Again, it gets killed with the pasteurization process, so no worries. But when they're milking, that may be how they're getting infected. We need to study that. But so obviously they need protection. And then we need to think about, until we see what's going on, you know, things where you have, you know, petting zoos and, you know, animal farms and all to visit. We just need to use a little bit of precaution. Probably there is no risk to the public unless you're in direct contact with these animals and probably for a prolonged period of time. And so it's pretty minimal.
Okay. So at this point, what I'm hearing, Dr. Pate, is we really don't need to be concerned about things like, you know, being worried about drinking cow's milk. We don't need to be, you know, concerned that this is going to necessarily pass to humans right now, but we still need to just keep ourselves educated.
Well, that's right. And we, and of course, scientists have a lot of work to do. We need to understand why has this virus changed behavior? How is it transmitting? What can we do to decrease the transmission? And we need to watch in case it does change. If we start seeing changes where people that get infected are infecting others or those kind of things, it, you know, we have to watch that. And then the government needs to prepare. I think we exhausted most of what's in the strategic national stockpiles. We need to get those stocked back up and make sure that we have plenty of pandemic supplies. We need to adjust our influenza pandemic planning because I don't think it's been updated since the COVID pandemic. And I'm hoping that we all learned a lot from that. Our book has 177 or 117 suggestions of things that we should have learned that might want to change some of these plans. So we got to look at the plans and update them. And we need to make sure that the vaccines that we have in the stockpile will address this circulating variant. And we need to make sure that you know, we're prepared to make vaccine quickly if that becomes necessary, and likely it won't. And the other good news is we won't be starting from scratch. We know that this would be an easy vaccine, relatively speaking, for us to make. And so we could get that out quickly. And we have antivirals already that we know tend to work for this virus. So this is not the same situation we were in with SARS-CoV-2.
Mm-hmm. Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate all of this information. So thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, about the current avian influenza outbreak that has happened at a dairy farm in Idaho, as well as in some other states. Remember, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.